The one word which can describe Savitri, if one were to choose one word to describe Savitri, the word that spontaneously comes to some inmost sight is wonder. It's truly a marvel and a wonder. It is a wonder because this book of 700 plus pages contains the whole universe in it. We are familiar only with one universe, and that too we are hardly familiar with it. To express a small little element of this universe requires volumes after volumes. And Sri Aurobindo has expressed not just one universe but multiverses, all the various universes in a single book. This is truly a wonder. The first impression that one gets when one is in contact with Savitri is as if sights after sights were bursting forth upon the consciousness, as if worlds after worlds were being torn, each world a screen, and Sri Aurobindo with a mighty hand tears the world and reveals us what is inside it. And yet that world is removed and something else bursts forth. It's a perfect transcription of spiritual experience. That's how the mother describes Savitri. The very first thing she speaks about Savitri is, it is the spiritual experience of the one who has written it. What a beauty, what a cryptic way, what a divine humility. Just as one were on a journey of spiritual odyssey, worlds after worlds burst upon sight. This is how Sri Aurobindo speaks in one of his poems. It's a wonder. It's a revelatory wonder. And it has to be received with all the humility of receiving a revelation. Revelations are not to be intellectualized. They cannot be understood by the intellectual mind because they belong to another order of reality than that with which we are familiar. They have to be received with all the wonder of a child, with all the faith and trust in the vision contained in the revelation, with the will to walk the way that is shown. And above all with love, because it is truly a work of love. It's Sri Aurobindo's gift to us. It's not just a book. When Sri Aurobindo was pressed with many, many pressing problems within, outside, in the whole world, Sri Aurobindo kept himself busy and engaged with one thing, the thing which he knew, not just felt and thought, to be of utmost importance. And that work is Savitri. Not heeding, not caring about himself, his own life, his own difficulties. He was busy and engaged with Savitri. It's truly a gift of love. And there's only one right response to love, and that is love itself. And this is a wonder that in times as these, and how much more in times when Sri Aurobindo incarnated in a physical, gross physical body, the supramental truth consciousness, how much more in times as those, the world was full of darkness. Whether we see the field of psychology or science or biology or art, everything was as if in a state of universal decomposition. This is how Sri Aurobindo describes the state of affairs in those days in one of his letters to the mother. These are truly times of universal decomposition. But then he goes on to say that for those of us who know that this is a passage. In another letter he says, even if the whole world were smashed I would see beyond the smash to the coming light. That's why it is a wonder how easily we become cynics in today's times. There is a bombshell which bursts somewhere and we lose faith. There is a little disaster somewhere in some corner of the earth and we lose faith. Probably we never had it. And Sri Aurobindo, in times when thousands of human beings were being crushed under the giant machinery of a civilization which was collapsing on all sides, there was Hitler, there was Stalin, there were much worse things, sure, the Great War. What was Sri Aurobindo busy with? He was not writing a philosophy of cynicism. He was writing a truth which gives hope, which gives light. A seed shall be sown in death's tremendous hour. This is how, in one of the passages, Sri Aurobindo describes the boon. This is the boon. A seed shall be sown in death's tremendous hour. It's almost a literal description of the birth time of Savitri. Physically, how would we describe the time when Savitri was born? Thousands of years later, if people forget what happened during that age, when they would see it, they would probably feel, well, here was someone living in a world which was very, very beautiful, so he could see many, many beautiful things to come. But what was that world in which Sri Aurobindo was lived and breathed in his physical frame? Some of the last passages being completed just around the time when he left his physical body. Literally, a seed shall be sown in death's tremendous hour. A branch of heaven transplanted to human soil. Nature shall overleap her mortal step. Fate shall be changed by an unchanging will. And then, this was a seed cast into endless time. This is Savitri. When the world was despairing without hope, even now. And this is the example, perfect example for us, his disciples, to look beyond the smash to the new creation. The mother says in one of her passages, much later, that there are two kinds of forces which are active in the world. The forces of destruction, which go into destroying the civilization, and the constructive forces of the future. And she invites us to join the constructive forces of the future. Destruction will take care of itself. It's going to be. And none can stop it. This is the ferment out of which the seed of new light, new consciousness will spring up. In fact, if we turn to the Gita, we find that each cycle of creation, when it ends, there is a collapse of all the values, deepest values cherished by that age. And there is a very beautiful one word which the Gita uses to describe this state of affairs, which today we describe in so many ways and words which are so inadequate. The one word, dharmasya glani, the decline of the truth that held a particular age. Each age has its yuga dharma, its guiding light. And that collapses. There is a dharmasya glani. All around there is decadence, there is rot, there is stench, there is massacre. That's the great night. Everything seems to have finished. But the beauty is, in that age, when everything around is rotting, there is the prescience of a greater birth. There is the first glimmer of a new light. It's very interesting that the hour of God, which is described in the Indian thought, the Brahma Muhurt, the Amrit Vela, When you wake up at that time, there is not a single ray of light. The stars have set. This moon, sometimes it is there, many times even the moon is not seen. All the houses are plunged into darkness. The lights have been switched off. No lamps, no fire, neither in homes nor in the sky. Yet something within us can feel a stillness, that there is probably a light which is waiting round the corner, and just a question of a few more minutes and there will be light. Savitri has been given in times as those when there was no light anywhere in the sky of the human horizon. And it comes as a revelation to reveal that which we wait to come. It is a seed cast in endless time. A word is spoken or a light is shown. A moment sees the ages toil to express. In fact, in Savitri itself, there is a description of Savitri. Everything is there in it. And the beauty is that this description of Savitri comes in a very strange canto. When Ashupati has descended into the thick of night, into the darkness, to know where is this heart of darkness, where does it lie, where does it come from, where is this falsehood born into this world, into this divine creation, and he plunges deep, 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 described in descent of night, descent into night, and then he goes still deeper into the worlds of falsehood, the mother of evil and the sons of darkness. And when he touches that bedrock of inconscience, there is one last veil that he must remove. And when he removes it, it's beautifully in Shobindo's poem, A God's Labor, on a desperate stair my feet have trod. And when he removes that veil, he discovers the lyric of love that wades through time. There he discovers the message that is waiting, covered by the dust of centuries, covered by the darkness of the inconscient, covered by veils after veils, dense veils of ignorance. This description comes at the end of Ashupati's exploration into the world of falsehood. On page 232, what is Savitri, if one were to ask? Here is his own description of what Savitri is. The skillful penman's unseen finger wrote his swift, intuitive calligraphy. Earth's forms were made his divine documents. It is the yoga of everyday life that Shobindo reveals. One of the things about Savitri, which the mother says, it is the yoga of the earth in its ascension towards the divine. So everything is there in it. Earth's forms were made his divine documents. The wisdom embodied mind could not reveal. In conscience chased from the world's voiceless breast. It is a revelation that comes when every corner is ablaze with light. That's the impression. When one reads Savitri, it is as if a single sight were spanning the entire height and range of the measureless Himalayas. At the same time, was measuring the depths of the Atlantic. And at the same time, was stretching out into the entire universe, as if a single sight contained all this. Inconscience chased from the world's voiceless breast. This beautiful poem cannot be born even if there is one single corner of darkness anywhere in the being. As long as there is any division, we cannot have this integral truth. Transfigured were the fixed schemes of reasoning thought, arousing consciousness in things inert. This is the effect of Savitri. The mother says it's the mantra of transformation, which is only about the outer body of Savitri. Just a contact with it, just as every being or every object has a threefold reality to it, an outermost, an inner, and an inmost. The outer is the body, the physical body. The inner is the many aspects, the psychological being, if we were to say so. And the inmost is the spiritual, the deepest. The outermost body of Savitri is the word and the sound body, the poetry. That form itself is so beautiful, so powerful, so delightful, that just in contact with its outer body begins to do a work of transformation. The mother has said it is the mantra of transformation. And what is the effect of this mantra? Arousing consciousness in things inert. Just mere reading it, it arouses consciousness in things inert. It charges not only human beings, the objects, the atmosphere. That's why the mother says, the time spent in its atmosphere is never wasted. Not just a question of reading. Just the atmosphere of Savitri arouses consciousness in things inert. He imposed upon dark atom and dumb mass the diamond script of the imperishable. This is a truth which the ages will toil to express, a truth which can never be destroyed. At the end of the great war, the Mahabharata war, when Dhritarashtra asks Sanjay, why Krishna the divine, you say he is the divine incarnate, and look what he has led this earth and humanity to. Everything is destroyed. Everything has collapsed. Arjuna had indeed feared it, that if we were to go in for this war, everything will be finished. All the cherished values, they will be Varnasankar, they will be, you know, all our women, men, everything will be lost, will lose its way. And Krishna leads him through that dark and stormy passage. And Dhritarashtra, the blind king, asks him, what is all this about? And Sanjay says, I can tell you what is all this about, O blind king. I have seen something which you have not seen. You have known only the war and the destruction, that side of the story. This will be forgotten. People will doubt whether there was actually a war or not, whether there were characters like Arjuna and Bhima and Drona and Karna and Duryodhana, or they were simply creations of the human mind. But two things humanity will remember, and that will redeem man. One, the vision on the great battlefield which I have seen, and thinking of which every hair of my body stands with delight. And second is that word, that colloquy on the battlefield. Humanity would forget much, much later about the war. But this colloquy, this dialogue which I have heard, that will liberate mankind. So we see today, and we saw yesterday, and we may see tomorrow in the days to come, much more destruction. And we may lose hope and heart, but we should not. Because there is, in the midst of all this darkness, the presence of Savitri. This is the diamond script of the imperishable. And as long as Savitri is there, there is hope. As long as Savitri is there is faith. As long as Savitri is there is light. And Savitri will be there, because it is the diamond script of the imperishable. Inscribed on the dim heart of fallen things, this is only the outer inscription. Where has he written the Savitri? There is a lot of debate which goes on. Some people who are very touchy about, finicky about small things, whether there is a comma here or there is not there, or whether there is a line missing or not. Savitri is written on the heart of man. When the Lord was writing on a piece of paper, he was simultaneously inscribing Savitri in terms of consciousness, in a secret language, on the heart of humanity. A very beautiful film which had come some time back, The Bulletproof Monk. And in that movie, a monk carries a sacred scroll which carries the mantra of immortality. And he must safeguard it against all dangers. There are a lot of people wanting to take it. And the movie runs through many, many events and circumstances. To cut the story short, eventually it is stolen. He has given it to somebody to safeguard it, and this somebody loses it. Well, it's stolen from him through a set of circumstances. And this somebody feels very bad. He says, "I am so sorry. I lost it. I couldn't keep it." And this monk laughs. He says, "Don't worry. Nothing is lost." He says, "What do you mean nothing is lost? You had asked me to guard it with utmost care. And I let it go. Now evil will become immortal." He says, "No, no, no, it cannot. There is one last mantra which I have inscribed nowhere." "Oh, where is it?" He says, "That I have inscribed within my heart. And nobody can read it except those who read it with faith and trust. Their eyes open and that mantra is revealed to them." So Savitri has two levels of reading. One level which is outer. Another, to discover the beauty, the wonder, the delight, that mantra which is inscribed within it, is to open our hearts to the joy and the influence of Savitri. That Savitri is written within the heart of earth, within the heart of humanity, inscribed on the dim heart of fallen things, a pain song of the free infinite. What is the verse? What is the meter of Savitri? No rules. It's free because it's infinite. What rules can bind the divine? And that is its beauty and grandeur. That's the difficulty sometimes we find in understanding Savitri. It's revelation upon revelation. There is such a swift passage from one sight to another, from one image to another, as if we were suddenly transported from an entirely different world to another order of realities. It's the free infinite. Who can move with such a freedom and swiftness? Not a human being, not a poet of even an extraordinary caliber, but one who has all the keys to every place and simultaneously who can go everywhere and is present everywhere. And Savitri is a creation of that. A paean song of the free infinite and the name foundation of eternity. The mother says each line of it has the vibratory quality and the magical power of the divine signature, Om, each line of it, and the name, foundation of eternity, and traced on the awake exultant cells. Just mere reading of it begins to vibrate in the cells. People speak of physical transformation and all kinds of theories and yoga of the body, and you know, there is so much. This is the yoga of the body directly. When we read it, it traces itself on the cells. Much later we will read how Savitri is to be received. As when a mantra sings in yoga's ears, stirring the blind brain. It stirs itself and the sound keeps on reverberating, reverberating, reverberating. And as it reverberates, it goes on changing the cells and gives us the capacity to receive the revelation that is contained in it. And traced on the awake exultant cells, in the ideographs of the ineffable, the lyric of the love that waits through time. What is Savitri but love of the divine that wades through time. Mother says in one of her small, my child, I am millions of years old. I am very ancient and I am waiting. This is how it is described even in the Vedas. O ancient of the days, Purusho Purano. Who is the most ancient? Who is waiting through the centuries, through ages? Even when nothing was covered with nothingness, when darkness was covered and wrapped within darkness, who was there? He was seated within it, immense and alone. And what was he carrying within his heart? Love, boundless love. And he is waiting, pulling matter out of the inertia of inconscience. This is the yoga of the earth. The lyric of love that wades through time and the mystic volume of the book of bliss. If delight were to write and express itself, how would it express? In what language? Well, Savitri, the mystic volume of the book of bliss. Really, if you read Savitri, every line, every passage, even when Shobindo describes the most gruesome things about the darkest aspects of creation, there is a delight. Literally, raso vaisaha. One wonders. He brings out, plucks out delight from everything, from behind everything. And the message of the superconscient fire, that fire which is concealed to man, it's superconscient. Man is not conscious of this message. So Savitri brings that message. And this message is a fire. It awakens within us. It lights us up. It awakens in us a will to walk the path. The mother speaks of Savitri at four levels. Of course, she says it is revelatory and prophetic and its content is universal. But then she says, it is the record of these, daily record of these spiritual experiences of the one who has written it. Second, she says, it is a complete system of yoga which can serve as a guide who want to take to the integral path. This is the integral path to the integral truth. Complete guide, nothing is omitted. Nothing is left out. The smallest details of the journey, not only when we are born as human beings, in fact, we will see the journey begins much before. It's a complete guide. Nothing else needs to be read after that, and it reveals us and carries us and gives us the strength and guides us. The mother says, Savitri can take us to the highest realizations of yoga, of the yoga of transformation, without a living guru. What more could one want? What more could one hope and expect? And yet, the irony and the paradox is that people enter Shabda or some bookstore and they look at Savitri and ask for the cost and the price. Then they ask for some simpler book, some less expensive book. This is human consciousness whose stupidity is measureless. And the message of the superconscient fire. Where is Savitri born? Third thing she speaks of is, third, Savitri is about the earth, the yoga of the earth, in its ascension towards the divine. What is this language? We have heard about yoga. In India, everybody is familiar with the word yoga. Or perhaps we have to doubt it, because what goes in the name of yoga nowadays is some exercises. Let's go for yoga every day. And after yoga, we are the same, or maybe we are a little more flexible animal. Instead of, you know, rigid animals, we become flexible animals. Sometimes we become dangerous animals because certain yogas give us a lot of vital energy. We do a lot of breath control and tremendous vital energy. So first we were little ego, now we become a gigantic ego. First we were capable of little harm. Now we are capable of great harm because we have controlled our mind and the vital like Ravana did. But we have no key to the inner life. The inner life is like a dwarf. That is our idea of yoga. Or at best, even in its purest form, we know about the yoga of love, bhakti, the yoga of karma, the yoga of knowledge and hatha yoga and raja yoga, and we are familiar with these words. So what is this yoga of the earth? This is the difference between a human-centric vision and a divine-centric vision. All in us is human-centric. Yoga, who does? Human beings do. The mother would tell us, oh fools of your mind, if yoga was left for human beings to do, man would never be able to take even a step towards yoga. Yoga is not done by man. And yoga has not started with man. In the Gita, when Sri Krishna tells Arjuna that I have given this yoga to many great ones before you, you are not the first one, nor the last one. So Arjuna asks a list of some great illustrious ones, and he says, I have given this yoga in the early days to Surya, Vivaswan, the great sun. So he wonders, what is sun doing? What kind of asana, what kind of yoga, bhakti, jnana? The sun is not supposed to read the scriptures. What is this yoga given to sun? Sri Aurobindo would tell us, yoga is given even before that. Yoga starts from the darkest night. And who is engaged in this yoga? The divine himself. Seated in the heart of darkness, he is busy carrying this darkness, pulling matter out of its darkness, slumber. And through this secret yoga, turning matter into living matter, breathing matter, sensible matter, matter that can feel. And again, through a still more powerful yoga, he pulls mind out of the inconscience and makes living matter turn into thinking matter. And now again, the divine comes to carry this yoga still further to a spiritualized and divinized matter. This is the yoga of the earth. And we find, where does this yoga begin? In the very first canto, the symbol dawn, where does the divine begin its journey? Where does the seed, which will turn into a great tree, begin its journey? The seed, which is a seeker of light instinctively, within which the entire tree and its script is engraved. It begins its journey from the darkness, from the night, from the thick of inconscience. It was the hour before the gods awake. The very first page, across the path of the divine event, the huge foreboding mind of night, alone in her unlit temple of eternity, lay stressed, immobile across silence, marge. Almost one felt opaque, impenetrable. This is the starting point, this is the backdrop. Like a great stage setter, Sri Aurobindo is setting the stage for this diamond script, for this beautiful song, for this epic of the divine bliss. And he is creating the backdrop. Like in dramas, you have a backdrop. So the backdrop is utter darkness. He says, I'll fill it with beautiful colors. So he starts with the thick of night. This is the huge foreboding mind of night. That is the backdrop for the divine drama, for the divine event. And in this backdrop, just as in any drama, you have the backdrop and you have the center stage. What is the center stage of this drama? Where is this yoga unfolding itself? The mother would tell us, the earth is the scene of the divine event. Many times, and nowadays, that image is afloat on the net, that how small is earth compared to the universe? This is all right. This is one side of the story. But there is another side of the story. that something is happening here which has not happened anywhere. A drama of unmeasured proportions. Nowhere on earth, nowhere on any, in any of the worlds, neither in the physical universe nor in other universes, there is something happening here. If there is one most happening place in the universe, it is earth. And what is happening here? The great divine drama. Matter is evolving despite everything, despite all the difficulties and troubles and struggle. It is the scene of a great divine event. Sri Aurobindo brings earth to its pristine glory. She is a living goddess. We find this image in the Puranas, that whenever earth is oppressed by the weight of darkness, she, the goddess, goes and prays to the Supreme to intervene. Of all the theories in modern context of earth, there is only one scientific theory which speaks of earth as a living body, Gaia. It's an ancient Greek myth where earth is treated as a living goddess. In India, of course, she was always known as a living goddess. Of course, we don't treat her like one. We treat her like something very inert. But she's a living goddess. And all that we release into the earth, not only in terms of physical, but in terms of our psychological states, is embedded upon it, imprinted upon it. And that makes it heavy and heavy and dense and dense. Every thought, every feeling is imprinted upon earth. Beautiful things, ugly things, dark things, luminous things. So this is, earth is the scene of this great event. So Sri Aurobindo is bringing to center stage this earth. Few lines below, we'll go like this, pick up few lines from here and there rather than go line by line, because it will really be an endless. Athwart the vain, enormous trance of space, its formless stupor without mind or life. If we look at this space without mind or life, a shadow spinning through a soulless void, thrown back once more into unthinking dreams, earth wheeled abandoned in the hollow gulfs, forgetful of her spirit and her fate. There is in earthly matter something. The divine is everywhere, but in earthly matter there is something special. And Mother says that is the psychic presence. This psychic presence, this immortal spirit in individual element, is found only in earth. Only upon earth, nowhere else, no, even the gods don't have it. That is why in Kathopanishad, when Nachiketa asks Yama, tell me of that which is immortal within the mortal, he asks in so many words, some say that there is a soul and some say there is not. Would you please clarify? Yama is the best person to say whether there is a soul or not, because it deals with this business. It is his business to take souls. And eventually he has no choice but to eventually release them into light. So he asks Yama, tell me. So Yama says, don't ask me this secret. Even the gods know it not. It's very strange. What is that secret given to man which gods do not know? Gods are supposed to know everything. Gods do not know it because gods do not have it. And that makes man at once, in his potentiality, superior even to the gods. Something man has within him. Why man? This very dust has something in it. It's not just a particle of sand. There is something in it which one doesn't find anywhere, not even in heaven. That is why even great beings long to come to earth. They want to come in to earth. It's very interesting again. The gods and the titans fight over what? Over taking hold of earth. Something is there in it which is not found anywhere. And yet The irony and the paradox, earth wheeled, abandoned. Abandoned by whom? Because it is abandoned, it is forgotten. There is no true abandonment, it is a forgetting. The only abandonment is to forget. And what has it forgotten? Its spirit and its fate. So this is how the backdrop and the stage is set for a great drama. In the first canto, Sri Aurobindo is revealing to us almost everything that will come in Savitri. So in this backdrop and in this center stage, earth is forgotten. Something is there. This drama is not being played for the first time. As the mother says, there have been earlier several pralayas. And after each pralaya, a new creation starts. Of course, she has said this time there will not be pralaya, though we will move very, very close to it, almost as if we'll be on the edge. She says, both these forces she sees in one of her visions are racing together, the total destruction and the new creation. And a time comes when suddenly the new creation steps forward and pralaya stops. So we'll reach that point. We are yet to reach. And this is not the first time that this drama is being played. This has been played through different forms and names. The divine comes. It's the drama of the divine. So we have Sambhavami Yuge Yuge. In each age of mankind, this drama is played. Even in this ultimate dissolution score, next page, almost in the middle, there lurked an unremembering entity, survivor of a slain and buried past, condemned to resume the effort and the pang. Something survives. Something cannot be destroyed. And that something is consciousness. You can annul all the phenomena of all the worlds, not only of earth or matter or physical world, even the subtle worlds. Everything can be dissolved, but at the end, something will remain, and that is consciousness. Survivor of a slain and buried past, condemned to resume the effort and the pang. This is the irony. It has chosen, but here Sri Aurobindo is using the language of the experience, that it experiences condemned to resume. It cannot but be this way. This is the way, there is none other. There is no escape. We try to escape. Sri Aurobindo elsewhere says, none can leave this game. Whoever tries to say that he is leaving the game is fooling himself. You cannot leave. Something is there which seeks this adventure, which has plunged itself. It will survive and come back again. That something is consciousness, condemned to resume the effort and the pang, reviving in another frustrate world, an unshaped consciousness, desired light. This consciousness carries the aspiration which seeks light instinctively. Even if everything is gone, there is in the dumb darkness a voice that calls, Mother, 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 Mother. Come, 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 come. It seeks light. And a blank prescience yearns towards distant change. It's a prescience. It not only seeks light, it knows there is light. And it knows one day all these countless worlds will be lit up with the light of a marvelous day. It knows it. It's a prescience. The mother says in one of her writings, faith is a sign that that which you believe has already been granted. Somebody asked her in a very different context that, Mother, should we have faith that the cure will take place and trust you, or should we just live in the consciousness of cure, or should we try and put our will? She says all these are same ways of saying the same thing. She says if you have the faith, it is a sign that it has already been granted. Very amazing. Faith comes later. The boon comes first. So if we have faith that this creation will turn divine, it means it has already been granted. One man's faith is enough. It doesn't need thousands and millions of people. one man's faith. Nalini Dai, in one of his powerful articles, says, somebody asked him about ashram and its future. He says, as long as there is one person who has faith in the vision of Sri Aurobindo, it will last. What a beautiful and powerful message. You just need faith, one person's faith. Surely there are many more. And this is a prescience. It's a blank prescience. Doesn't know, but it seeks light. It instinctively knows. Like a tree, like a seed knows the light and moves towards it. It does not have the map. It cannot analyze and tell, but it seeks. So something in us instinctively seeks it. Something in matter seeks it. And that what happens? As a result of that seeking, something comes from the other side. That's something which has embedded itself in matter. So the fourth thing that the mother tells us about Savitri, the third was yoga of the earth. It is the experiences of the Divine Mother in her effort to adapt her body, her consciousness to this body which she has undertaken, and is this world of ignorance and falsity in which she is born. So these are four things she speaks. The fourth is the effort of the Divine Mother. As a result of this cry for change, this cry itself is also the divine who is hidden inside, prescience. So it is the divine who works on both poles. Here he aspires, there he gives. Here he seeks, there he delivers. We find it in the mother's prayers and meditation. She prays for the earth and she grants the boon to the earth. So here we see, as a result of this aspiration, a few lines below, arrived from the other side of boundlessness, an eye of deity peered through the dumb deeps. A scout in a reconnaissance from the sun, it seemed amid a heavy cosmic rest, the torpor of a sick and weary world, to seek for a spirit, soul and desolate, too fallen to recollect forgotten bliss. So above everything else, Savitri is the story of the Holocaust of the Divine Mother. She has plunged herself into this creation. And what happens? When she comes in contact with this creation, what is her feeling? In one of her prayers, the mother says, describes this world as a sick world. We all talk about it as a sick world. But when we talk of it with cynicism and a kind of despair and frustration. Oh, this is a sick world. We must get away from it. And the mother says, yes, it is a sick world. But precisely because of its sickness, one feels a special love towards it, as one would towards a child who is sick and weary. You know, as long as child is healthy, it's all right. When a child is sick, he becomes the object of special attention. So precisely because it's a sick world, that is the compassion and love which she brings along with her. It feels to her it's a sick and wearied world, sleeping in torpor, not even aware of its fate. What would mother have felt when she was born amidst us? We write the story of her life and sometimes trivialize it. We write story of Sri Aurobindo's life, not one life, many lives. And we trivialize it. Who can write what he would have experienced when he was born amidst this darkness? Who could even sense it and feel what he would have felt? The torpor of a sick and weary world, to seek for a spirit, soul and desolate. It's like when one is sick and you wake up and say, come on, get up and meditate. One would say, oh, my head is heavy, I am feverish. You ask me to meditate. If you wake up a sick person and tell him, I am going to read out to you some nice passages and beautiful passages, most people will say, come on, just give me one tablet of Melidone or aspirin or Crocin. I don't need all these lectures. Of course, some people are rejuvenated in that state. But most of us don't want to hear those things that moment. We just want to go back to sleep with a tablet of aspirin. So she is experiencing that when this eye of deity comes, that this is a sick and weary world. It has forgotten its bliss. It is too fallen to recollect it. It cannot seek it. This is the work she realizes. She is just taking note. Intervening in a mindless universe, its message crept through the reluctant hush. Nobody is there to listen. And yet, and that is the marvel and wonder, eternity speaks. In Savitri, Shobindo elsewhere describes what is that hour when God's word is given to man. Thus shall the mass transcendent mount his throne, when darkness deepens, strangling the earth's breast, and man's corporeal mind is the only lamp. As a thief's in the night shall be the covert tread of one who steps unseen into his own house. And then he says, a voice ill heard shall speak. The soul obey. We don't have to worry whether people are hearing, understanding Shobindo or not. None can understand him. These mortal ears cannot hear him. They are not tuned to this speech. We are tuned to only our normal speech. Somebody calls our name, we hear immediately. Even if nobody calls, we say, did you call me? But when somebody calls divine name, oh, it doesn't matter to me. My concern is, what am I going to have today? So it doesn't matter, but something in us listens. Who is that someone? The soul obey. Its message crept through the reluctant hush, calling the adventure of consciousness and joy. This adventure of earth is a delightful adventure. There is, of course, we know Satprem's book, The Adventure of Consciousness, which so beautifully the mother herself inspired him to write it. But that word is missing, which changes everything. It is an adventure of consciousness and it's an adventure of joy. It's a delight. There's a great delight. What would be the worthy of doing? We often look for something worth doing. Here is something worth doing, to undertake this adventure. What is this adventure? To participate consciously in the yoga of the earth, in its ascension towards the Supreme. Man does not do yoga. This is a myth and an illusion. And the sooner we get rid of the myth, the better for us. Sometimes we become too responsible and too guilty and too distraught and too broken and too frustrated. I am doing yoga. I couldn't do yoga. I didn't succeed in yoga. Who is this I? I does not do yoga. The divine does yoga, and we can do saha yoga. We can join in that great stream. By whatever way, by faith we can join, by effort we can join, however small our effort. By little sip from that stream we can join. By jumping into that stream and losing all of ourselves we can join. The royal way to join. But join we must. And what is that joining? Calling the adventure of consciousness and joy. Shobindo says in one of his messages, I have not come here to create mathas and sannyasis and all these things. What have I come here? I have come here to call the souls of the strong to the Leela of the Supreme. What is this call of Shobindo? The call of a great adventure, the adventure of consciousness and joy. And he tells us, not only he is calling us, he is giving us the supreme assurance that it will be done, because all can be done if the God touch is there. It will be, because this adventure is not a human adventure. We are not on any human project. We sometimes get too worried. Oh, what will happen? What is the future? What will happen to the ashram? What will happen to society? What will happen to Auroville? Whose creation is it? It's the divine's creation. We keep forgetting. Who can touch the divine creation? It will go through many phases, but eventually it cannot but succeed. The mother says in one of her messages, never for an instant vacillate in the belief that the work undertaken with Sri Aurobindo, by Sri Aurobindo, will not culminate in success. Why? Because here is the master mantra, all can be done if the God touches there. A hope stole in that hardly dared to be. What she comes and gives and goes back seemingly is a hope. She comes to plant a seed. Often we say, but mother has left her body. How could she stay? What is this earthly nature? She stayed so long. It's itself a strange thing. Even for that consciousness, if we could just conceptualize even for a moment, what is that boundless consciousness? And even for it to stay for a moment in this earthly frame would be so much of struggle and pain. For us to leave it is a struggle. For us to get out of this consciousness is a struggle. For the divine to enter and stay in this earthly frame is a struggle. That's why the mother says, fourth thing about Savitri, the effort of the divine mother to adapt to matter and the body she has undertaken. So a few lines below. And how does she work? What has she done? What is the work of the avatar? What is the method? An errant marvel with no place to live. Into a far off nook of heaven there came a slow miraculous gesture's dim appeal. The persistent thrill of a transfiguring touch persuaded the inert black quietude. Someone would wonder, what is Sri Aurobindo doing sitting in one small corner? Few lines below we'll have something, another line. One lucent corner windowing hidden things forced the world's blind immensity to sight, and darkness failed and slipped like a failing clock, falling cloak from the reclining body of a god. One small corner, that's all the divine needs. Duryodhana knew this secret. We as the Lord's disciple don't know this, what can be done from one point. When Sri Krishna asked Duryodhana, I don't want five villages, give me one little point. In fact, he says, that much earth I want as you can place needle tip, suiki nok. That's all I want. It's, you know, one wondered, why would he want that kind of spot? What will Pandavas do? Nobody can even step on that. And Duryodhana says, no. He's very intelligent. He knows if you give one stop, spot, he will change everything from that spot. Even Vali's guru, Shukracharya knew it. When Vali, the demon king, divine comes concealed as Vamana, and he says, I just want 3 feet land. His guru says, don't do this. You don't know who is he. This fellow in 3 feet will measure the entire earth and heaven. He says, what do you mean? He's so small. Okay, try it. And he covers the entire one span earth, the other, all the heavens. The third, he says, where do I place it? He says, on my head. That's the only thing left. And he crushes it and conquers the subconscious realms. So one point, that's all. What? How does the mother work? What is her yoga? In one of her visions, he says, I saw, what is this yoga of the world? How was she doing? She doesn't see that I am going all around the world distributing pamphlets and telling everybody, come, please listen what Sri Aurobindo is telling us, having seminars and conferences. What is she doing? She says, I became that mighty heart of love, pulsating, and which eats with each throb. I was sending waves of bliss and love into this universe, and it is changing by that power and that presence. We have the presence of the Samadhi. One small window. So, most unassuming place. Many people go near and just wonder, where is Sri Aurobindo's Samadhi? Some people, I believe, have gone and asked, where is t-shirt sold here? One can just pass by without noticing. Just about a few feet away, you have chappals kept chaotically. There is no marble monument. Now people make relic center with marbles and all this. The Lord is put himself in the most unassuming place. Below the roots of the service tree are going. There is not even enough place to move around. And yet one small window, one small corner pulsating with light and its influence changing the entire earth. This is the yoga the divine does. Divine does not go to advertise. Sri Krishna did not tell Arjuna, Arjuna, oh my God, I am telling Gita to you. Can you just get a tape recorder? These are very precious words. Before they fall out of my lips, can you capture it? Nowadays, even some of us, we speak before speaking, we want a video recording. As if our words are so precious. The Lord didn't care. He didn't even know when he's writing whether it'll be printed or not. Sri Krishna didn't know who will record it. But it was recorded. How was it recorded? We heard in the heart of the earth of fallen things. It was recorded there. It was revealed in the process of time. Everything was lost. The Gita is there. Everything may be lost. Everything may be doubted. But Savitri is there. One lucent corner, windowing hidden things, forced the world's blind immensity to sight, and darkness failed and slipped like a falling cloak. And a few lines above that, you see, whichever way you read Savitri, you read, it's like an ocean. You go a few strokes here and you come back a few strokes here, it's the same delight. The persistent thrill of a transfiguring touch persuaded the inert black quietude, and beauty and wonder disturbed the fields of God. Someone would ask, Mother, how did you do the yoga of here? How did you do this yoga? She hardly taught yoga, so to say, to anybody here. If one were to see the daily routine, she played tennis. She went to different departments. She taught people how to wipe the dining room places. She created so many things. And she was doing yoga. What was this yoga she's engaged in? And how was she doing? She was just squandering beauty and wonder and delight upon earth. Some of us who saw the exhibition, Mother in Tennis Ground. Amazing! One can get that feel right from the photographs. That there is so much delight just around her. She is playing tennis and it is yoga. Just the persistent thrill of a transfiguring touch persuaded the inert black quietude. Who could resist it and for how long? This was her challenge. Let me get the most difficult cases, the most difficult of humanity. And what I will give in return? I'll give love, the greater difficulty, greater love. Still greater difficulty, still greater love. The greatest of difficulties, the highest of love. And with that, I would change it. We'll read one more passage and then we'll close. The whole story is there, and now the divine presence which has come in matter does the yoga withdraws. Then the divine afflatus spent withdrew. Unwanted fading from the mortal's range. This is a mystery. The divine withdraws from the earth. But something it leaves. Sri Krishna, when he speaks, Sri Aurobindo, when he speaks of the four great events in the history of earth, one of them he says is Krishna's exile from Vrindavan. Another one, Christ's crucifixion. Now one would wonder, in both these events, the divine is leaving. Why is calling it great? It is the saddest day. Yes, but what he does, this also is an action. The Gita speaks of Janma Karma Chame Divyam. My birth and my works are divine. Sri Aurobindo would add, Mrityu Chame Divyam. Even my death is divine. It's an action. Christ from his cross humanized Europe. And Krishna's exile created devotional religion. Before that, there was only knowledge. In the Upanishads, we find that seeking after knowledge. Bhakti is there, but very little. But after Krishna's exile, there is love born. Oh my God, whom did we lose? So long as when she is there, we argue with her, we even fight with her, we doubt her, we raise questions after questions. All of us. It's not that some people, this humanity. Oh mother, you say this. How do you say this? How do you know this? No, I won't do this. I will do that. Mother, I have my little problem. My promotion is affected. My child has got fever. All these things. And she keeps pouring. And then when she withdraws, what happens? What does she leave? On page 5, in the middle, then the divine afflatus spent, withdrew, unwanted, fading from the mortal's range, a sacred yearning lingered in its trace. The worship of a presence and a power, too perfect to be held by death-bound hearts. How can we hold that vision? That vision of immortality, that vision of bliss, that vision of light ineffable. We who know only death and suffering and sorrow and error and sin. For man's mind is the dupe of his animal self, hoping its lust to win. He keeps within him, harbors within him a grisly elf, enamored of sorrow and sin. Our drama cannot endure without it. Only bliss appears to us monotone. We get tired of too much of peace. So it fades. But when it fades, what is left? Suddenly, worship of a presence and a power too perfect to be held by death-bound hearts. The prescience of a marvelous birth to come. Only a little, the godlight can stay. This is the backdrop, the stage, and the background of Savitri. Much though we would love to continue and continue, today we have to stop here because dining room is early. So we'll meet tomorrow at 5:15. 2 sessions tomorrow.